Hey everyone, welcome to JoJo's World.
Good day.
Good day.
Good day, mate.
Good day, mate.
How you going?
Is that a ladder?
Is that a ladder over there? I shan't deny its purpose.
Pris, is that a ladder?
Pris's pawns are just like...
Yeah, it's just the other Night Savers.
Yeah.
Pris, there may be boomers afoot.
Pris, the boomers. Perhaps, I don't know who this is. Celia, maybe?
Yeah, sure.
Pris, I do not know who this ladder speaks to, but we should go up it.
But it speaks to me, Arisen. I mean, Pris.
Oh, man.
Dragon's Dogma 2, it's out. It's good. I've only played a little bit of it, but it's just more of the same. And that's good for me.
Mm.
And that's what matters.
Not me.
No.
No.
But no, you're not me, though.
No, I'm not.
And who
you.
Am I? I'm Liam S. Smith, one of your co-hosts.
And I'm Valentine, the other one of the co-hosts.
This is JoJo's World.
What is that?
JoJo, Nick, play the, let's say, Swiss national anthem softly in the background as I speak. This is JoJo's... Stop.
There it is.
JoJo's World, our JoJo's Bizarre Adventure recap and discussion podcast, where today we are wrapping up our...
podcast. No, yeah. We're never doing that.
We are wrapping up our recap and discussion of Bubblegum Crisis, Tokyo 2040, a show about robots from the 90s.
Would we call them robots, or would we call them...
humans.
The anti-seed of humanity.
That's not what that means. You haven't figured out what that terminology means from the show, and you finished watching all of it.
Look, I know that it's... I know what it's getting at, but I'm still like, oh yeah, little thing in the brain. Yeah,
it's a brain chip used to make a robot.
Oh, I thought it was a reference to the Antichrist, but that's fine.
I mean, it's not.
This is the most... So, okay, let me just preface this whole episode.
We finish the show, they go to space, they kill a big woman.
Yeah. Preface this entire ep, right, with Liam, as soon as they said... It was something like, oh, I guess I'll become God. He literally immediately was like, Nick, remind me to talk about this lit crit
bullshit. No, that was much later in the show.
And I'm like, what could you possibly bring up?
My lit crit bullshit, which we'll get to in due course.
Okay.
Stay tuned for some bullshit. is to do with all of the potent symbolism surrounding the killing blow struck on Galatea.
Interesting. Okay. Mm. And it's not to do with all the other potential symbolism that we've been exposed to this entire time.
It's not unrelated.
Oh, fuck. Okay.
Everything's connected, Nick.
Oh.
It's a cohesive work. It's got no flaws.
Just
it's
like...
fully perfect.
Just like humanity.
Nick, just before we start getting into our recap and discussion, I believe we have yet to be cancelled for the Dungeon Meshy autism rant that you tricked me into, so dodged a bullet there.
I'm glad it made it into the podcast, yeah.
No, I looked up a few comments from the reddit.com logic won't help us rewatch, you know, Bubblegum Crisis Tokyo 2040 rewatch.
Wait, what? What does that mean?
So logic won't help us understand, you know, is a very catchy line from the OP that you've only ever seen twice.
Oh, okay, gotcha. All
but
right.
For most people...
they see it every day.
Yeah, every fucking day. I think most people are quite fairly mixed on the series.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to find a particular comment that caught my eye.
I can just imagine the number of comments that are like, I'm a really big fan of the robots and the Breastises. Don't know how I feel about the underlying themes of humanity's destined death.
No, I think people quite fairly pointed out in recurring comments that, you know, the show's got relatively inconsistent, like, character development. Like, we start with Lina as our focal character.
Yep.
She completes her arc in...
12 eps or something?
I would say less. I would say 4 episodes.
Oh, to become part of the Night Savers. Yep.
And then, other than that episode where she takes the trip back home and reckons with whether she wants to become a housewife or stay a Night Saber, she doesn't really have any other character development.
Yep.
She just, like, she's the one who wants to be a superhero.
Yeah, one and done.
And then, you know, in these episodes, the climax of the show, it struck me as quite strange that, you know, they spent probably a good 2/3 of the show hinting at or explicitly building up the sort of relationship and contrast between Celia and Galatea.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Celia's not even present for the climax.
But at the same time, Pris is there.
And Pris... I'll just read this comment. Pris, the fuck? They are trying to write Pris as both the stoic and the hothead at the same time. And it's really not working for me. And I think that's kind of fair.
Mm.
But I can't find the particular comment that I read. But I think it struck me, particularly given the way we took a Stone Ocean length break between the two halves of this show,
yep.
that it is very much structured like two completely different shows in those two halves, where the first half was that Monster of the Week format, of course, but also there was the ongoing mystery about, you know, the nature of the boomers, what's going on with Genom.
Yep.
Whereas second half, I mean, yes, it reveals the answers to those mysteries, but from that point on, it's fully serialized, but also within that serial storytelling, it's quite slow-paced, I would say. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think every episode that we've had has been, you know, there's three story beats.
There's a good, like, ad break, what do you call it, the space an between ad break?
Like, space between ad breaks.
Yeah, the content that is happening between ad breaks. What would you call, like, one of those little blocks?
Sections?
Yeah. There's a good section of, like, most episodes where we're like, this really didn't need to be a whole section. You know, when they were fighting that wall that one time, or...
Yeah. And there's a lot of diversions that then lead absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
For example, when they're fighting themselves...
Like, yes, in this episode, they do a mirror match against,
like, nano...
goo metal...
Versions of themselves.
Hard suits.
Fucking water temple-ass motherfuckers. Yeah.
They struggle for a little while, then all effortlessly win.
Yeah, and then we're like, oh, we're back where we were.
Well, Lina achieves self-actualization and knows that she,
is a night saver.
Yeah. And she affirms her identity and then strikes the killing blow.
Yep.
And then Nene is like, yeah, and I'm going to win too. And then Pris doesn't even win. Her thing is just like, I don't even need to let you kill me. And then dissolves into goo.
Oh, man. Such a, it's like a wild roller coaster of stuff happening in these last two eps that made me go, okay, so the show is just unhinged. Like, it's just crazy.
Speak on that.
Well, there's something alluring about, like...
Go on.
About how we've set up all of this stuff to do with, like, humanity versus machines. And then the last two episodes boil down to, but if I'm a werewolf,
What the fuck are you talking about?
I'm talking about where she's turning into... Where Pris is turning into, like, boomer...
When her hard suit turns into the alien Alien.
Yeah, and she's turning into Sonic from Sonic Unleashed.
Yeah.
As I joked at that exact moment.
Yep. Shout out to the year of Shadow the Hedgehog, of course.
Yeah. Rough. Wait, that's a dog.
I recently watched a compilation, and it was maybe the most puerile thing I've ever watched. A compilation of all the little rhyming couplets that Craig Charles did as the outro for episodes of Robot Wars. And they would all be like, puppies have...
yuppies.
Puppies have tails, kittens have claws. We've got them both. Kisses his fingers. On Robot Wars. Good night.
Hang on, is it like unique every episode? Yeah. What? Okay.
And it never, like, it always has the cadence of something that makes sense, but it never does.
Is it like to the degree of like, come in the front, leave out the back. We've got herpes, Robot Wars. And you're like, wait, what? What is this?
Boomers are humans. Humans have flaws. We'll destroy them both here on Robot Wars.
Humans have bones, machines have blades. We've got everything.
No, you've
got
to get the rhyme in.
Oh, so it has to be oars.
Yeah.
Humans have bones, machines have
oars.
Jaws.
Machines are boats. Machines are specifically canoes, they have oars.
Capitalism sucks. Communism whores. What do they stand for? Robot wars. Mm-hmm.
The humans made us to fight their wars, but we'll show them what's what when we start the robot wars.
Too fast.
Hire me to host Robot Wars.
Too Fast, Too Furious has the race wars. You can see it all here on Robot Wars.
You are running wars with wars.
You just did that.
I did. You got me.
Yeah.
And I explode because you defeated me.
Just like Robot Wars.
Look, I am being critical, but I have enjoyed watching this show, returning to it for nostalgia purposes in the podcast. I think it could probably stand to be about 5 episodes shorter.
Or less. It could have stood to have maybe a year's worth of writing instead of 3 weeks of some guys in like a bar.
Feverish 24/7. Oh my god. We only made 3 OVAs before. Now we're going to make a full 26 episode order in 6 weeks.
It has the strong essence of the exact opposite writing process of Berserk. Like the manga Berserk, right? Where, you know, he's just like, I know exactly how I want it to end. I know exactly how I want the arcs to be placed out.
But I will die.
It's just a matter of time for me to draw the exact pixel-perfect wave crashing onto a ship. And you're like, you don't need to do that.
You're just a mortal man.
You don't need to wait 2 years to release one chapter of a manga. Whereas the other side of that is One Piece, where you're like, I had a great idea for a fruit.
I thought you were saying this was the other side of that.
No. So Bubblegum Crisis is the One Piece style, where you're like, oh, maybe it'll be deep and meaningful. And then they allude to some kind of, like, higher purpose.
I would say One Piece is not without meaning. I would say, if nothing else, it's both an interesting story about government control of information.
Okay.
And it's also, like, I would say one of the closest things we have to, like, a modern epic.
Okay.
In that it goes forever and does explore in detail every element of a whole fucking world that doesn't need to.
Yeah.
But it's also too long.
Now, new question for you, okay? And answer me this honestly. Is there a term that's like for anime? Is there a term, like an equivalent term in anime for Stockholm Syndrome? Because I feel like you've just described some kind of Stockholm Syndrome for One Piece.
Well, Stockholm Syndrome was, of course, a lie perpetuated by the police to discredit a witness.
Maybe that's the real message of One Piece.
I'm not a huge One Piece fan.
I don't know. Look,
I fell off when they were desperately trying to protect some giant little girls from, I want to say, poison gas.
Okay. Anyway, point being, you've got Berserk that meticulously details beginning, end, all of that stuff.
Well, not end.
Or like Vampire Hunter D, well, he knows how he wanted it to end.
He knew how he wanted it to end.
Yeah.
He doesn't know anything anymore on account of how he's dead.
Alas, too soon. Taken from us before a rich end. But the exact opposite of that is this.
Well, no, I think, but I think One Piece, the plan has been there all along.
Okay.
It's just that the route to get there has been getting ever more circuitous.
Yeah, okay. All right. Okay, maybe I'll
I think you're just ragging on One Piece because you don't like One Piece.
I don't even know if I know enough about One Piece.
I feel like I should pivot your metaphor to being about Dragon Ball Z.
Yes.
Where first Frieza was going to be the end, then Cell was going to be the end, and then Majin Buu was the end.
But also a lot of manga.
And then it kept going after that too.
Yeah, a whole lot of manga where they're just like, week by week, they're like, I need...
Now Boruto's here.
Yeah, it's like, I need something, and it needs to be cohesive enough that it works.
When I was a kid, I really hated the sort of, not open-ended, but like, lack of closure to some elements in the ending in this. So I was like, Googling for sequels.
I see.
And I didn't understand what fan fiction was at the time, but I remember finding someone's, like, Bubblegum Crisis, Tokyo 2042 fan fiction, and it was just incoherent. It was on, like, a GeoCities or something.
You can't see it on
Mega Tokyo, or Tokyo 3, or whatever it's fucking called in this, truly is the GeoCity of the modern era.
The GeoCity. Is this why all the boomers
actually, in Evangelion, the city is contained of Tokyo is contained or constructed around what they call the Geofront.
Okay.
Which is, as far as I can tell / remember, just like a mechanism that means when a giant robot battle is happening, they can lower all the skyscrapers down underground, protecting them.
Why don't they just keep them underground, though?
I mean, that would be very depressing, wouldn't it?
Maybe that's a
It's also like a high security environment down there.
Oh, okay. So it's not like...
On account of how Adam, the first angel, is kept crucified beneath Tokyo.
What?
Or is it Lilith?
What?
Can't remember.
What?
You know about the angels.
I know the angels are the bad guys, I think. And they're the ones that keep trying to destroy...
Or is humanity the bad guys? Deep, makes you think. Just like this show.
Speaking of this show...
Do you want to resolve that question?
No. Okay. I want to watch Evangelion one day and be like, what the fuck is this show? On my own terms.
It's a neon Genesis.
What does that mean?
Like Genesis from the Bible.
Yeah.
The beginning.
Yeah. What the hell is neon?
You know, lights. Lights and shit.
And Evangelion.
Yeah.
Angel.
Self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Eve.
Yep.
Angel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm with you.
No, I'm done.
Okay. This... Anyone who's listening to this must just be like,
these motherfuckers.
Are they high on, like, hot chocolate and brekkie burgers or something?
We're high on finishing this show and not knowing what we're doing next.
Yeah, basically. Well, we know two things.
We have some ideas.
One is, we gotta go back to those OVAs.
Yeah, we gotta.
It's a nice palate cleanser to remind ourselves that JoJo's exists.
It does. The first of these episodes is called Walking on the Moon, which is named after the reggae song by the band The Police. Featuring Sting.
Ooh. Otherwise known as Fade Rotha in David Lynch's 1984 Masterpiece.
Ah, starring Kyle MacLachlan.
Dune. Mm, the very same.
He's got a little pug in that one.
Yeah, he does.
The pug is a symbol for Paul.
In that he's
because
a
of
messiah?
Selective breeding.
Ah. Is it?
Yeah.
Is it a metaphor? I thought they just put it in there to be like, we want a cute dog.
Oh, Nick.
Audiences love
this is
dogs.
From Wikipedia. Very deep, detailed research here.
Possibly the best source in the modern era.
I do sincerely contend.
I just love, as soon as I said that, you're just like, put phone down. All right, listen. Here's an opinion about Wikipedia.
It's the last good website.
Go on.
I mean, look at Twitter, look at Facebook, look at all of the other websites that the rise of the Web 2.0 platform has pushed to obsolescence.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Look at the preponderance of fan wikis that were snapped up by fandom and made nigh unusable.
Mm-hmm. What about forums and their death of...
Exactly.
Okay. What about apps?
That's not a website.
Mm, you're right. But everything is a website now. When you open an app, it's basically just a website, right? Like, no. If I go to my online banking, I can download the app, but that's just a wrapper for a website.
Mm. Yeah, but it doesn't contain, like, publicly useful information or discussion. That's what I'm driving
at. Oh, God,
here.
No. Absolutely not. But Wikipedia.
Yeah. It's good.
Mm. Mm.
Which is why I will be quoting exclusively from Wikipedia from now on.
No interviews, no forum posts, no Reddit, no Twitter. Pure Wikimedia.
Thanks, Jimbo.
Wikipedia has articles on every world war. We're not going to discuss them here on Robot Wars.
I got an alt.
Okay, go for it.
Wikipedia has articles with many sub-claws. We'll read them all here on Robot Wars.
I love it, but
Sting has said that he wrote the song when he was drunk one night after a concert in Munich. The following morning, he remembered the song and wrote it down. And I quote, this is from L'Historia Bandido, 1981.
Go on.
Which I assume is French for the history of the band.
It could be the story of the band.
I was drunk in a hotel room in Munich, slumped on the bed with the whirling pit. Slumped on the bed with the whirling pit when this riff came into my head.
You know, the whirling pit.
He was there. The whirling pit was there.
Yeah, when you're so drunk and you're like, ugh.
I got up and started walking around the room singing, walking around the room. I don't know how this song goes. Yeah, yeah, walking around the room. That was all. In the cool light of the morning, I remembered what had happened and I wrote the riff down. But walking around the room was a stupid title. So I thought of something even more stupid, which was walking on the moon.
And then he wrote it down and that was it?
And the rest was history. In his autobiography, Sting implies that the song was partially inspired by an early girlfriend.
Oh.
Deborah Anderson was my first real girlfriend. Walking back from Deborah's house in those early days would eventually become a song. For being in love is to be relieved of gravity. That's some fucking Jimmy Shive overly from You're the Worst shit.
Wait, who's that?
He's this... Okay, so the You're the Worst is a sitcom about Jimmy Shive overly and... Gretchen, I want to say her last name is Myers.
It's not Gretchen Wiener.
No.
No.
Who are two people who fall in love at a wedding and they are both the worst. But Jimmy's whole thing is that he's a pretentious novelist. So he would say, and he's also English living in LA.
Okay.
So he would say, in one of his rare moments of sincerity where he thinks he's being much deeper than he actually is, he would say, for being in love is to be relieved of gravity, Gretchen, if you can believe that.
Interesting. Interesting. Like a real Shit Creek character who's like...
Shit Creek, that's the name of that show.
Yeah, that's my entire thing.
The B-side to the song, Visions of the Night, was written by Sting. He said of the song, this was the first... Does Sting have an English accent?
I don't know.
Never heard him speak.
I don't know...
He's getting the Beatles voice.
Okay, all right.
This was the first song I wrote after going to London. It was hard to be serious about the whole thing. I was bemused. Much to Stuart Copeland's disgust. According to Copeland, the song was too cerebral for the band's early audiences. So Sting would call it 3 o'clock shit. Visions of the Night was nicknamed 3 o'clock shit.
Because it was too cerebral.
Yep.
What? What does it mean by too cerebral? Please tell me it expands on that point.
No.
Oh my God. That's like me saying, hey, Liam, do you want to go to the pub? And you're like, that's too cerebral.
Oh, 3 o'clock shit was a reference to a rejected Police song, 3 o'clock Shot, for Strontium 90 Police Academy, which is an album.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
I guess ultimately, when it comes to Sting, ACAB.
ACAB?
Yeah. You must have heard this acronym.
No?
It stands for All Cops Are Bastards.
Oh.
And he's in the band The Police.
I getcha.
Or if you're me, playing Helldivers,
mm-hmm.
It stands for Autocannons Are Bellissimo.
All crabs are bad.
Rude. Fucking rude.
Well, look, we're all going to evolve into them eventually, all right?
And the second episode is entitled Still Alive and Well.
Which is the lamest name for a song I've ever heard.
It's actually an album.
Oh.
By blues rock guitarist and singer Johnny Winter.
Okay, who the hell is Johnny Winter?
Never heard of him.
Yeah.
But there was a song called Still Alive and Well on that track.
Ugh, disgusting.
He died in 2014, which is why we haven't heard of him.
Okay, right.
Because we weren't born yet.
Mm-hmm.
Winter was known for his high-energy blues rock albums, live performances, and slide guitar playing from the 60s to early 2000s.
Ooh.
He also produced 3 Grammy Award-winning albums for blues singer and guitarist Muddy Waters.
Oh!
My dad was a real Muddy Waters guy.
But did he like the band?
Is it a band or a guy?
It's a good question.
It's a guy.
It's a guy?
Yeah, I just said.
Oh.
Blues singer and guitarist. Look, if I'm not going to listen to myself and you're not going to listen to me, what are we doing here?
Well, the listeners are here.
Are they? All right, let's get into it.
Okay, so first step, walking on the moon. It's
walking around the room.
It is.
There is a lot of walking around the room in this episode.
There is, and a lot of 3 o'clock shit.
Mm.
So they're on the station.
No, you're skipping ahead.
They're on the sky.
We start with Galatea's life story from her own perspective as she ruminates on the nature of humans and the nature of boomers for what feels like 15 minutes.
Yeah. So there's a lot of like shots of industrial gears working.
The
like
fact is, a human being exists as a human being, and a machine exists as a machine. Mm. And humans detect something in themselves called a soul. But how can you give a machine a soul? Well, they stuck my physical body before I had a sense of self in Celia's brain and grew me from her neural pathways.
In her hypothalamus.
Yeah.
Which I was like, that can't be right.
Why not?
Human brains don't work that way, do they? Like, isn't it?
What
like,
are you asking me?
So, like,
are you asking me if the magical piece of technology that makes this sci-fi show possible is real?
Yeah. Cue laugh track.
And it's called the anti-seed because it's like what? It's creating.
It's basically creating a machine out of or a human.
It's creating
soul.
Life out of human brain.
Yeah. So, like, an artificial life.
In the same way that people refer to sperm as seed, this is like an anti-seed.
Yeah.
Antichrist.
It's like
thing.
It's like antimatter, where it's like
no. It's
like machine versus natural organic life. It's like positive life, negative machinery. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, near automata.
Yeah. This can't continue.
The podcast?
No, the machines.
Ah.
Yes.
So they grew her, and we see shots of, like, young Mason being like, I sure am impressed by this monster we're making.
Oh boy, love to see that tiny little thing go into her brain.
And lots of, like, shots of energy moving in, computer chip patterns.
Yep.
If anyone's ever seen Fate Stay Night, when the protagonist Shiro Emiya does his dumb fixing magic where he traces the shape of something with magic, it's the same lines as that. Mm. Haven't seen it, just watch my housemate watch it.
Okay, I'm good that we've clarified that.
She was a small girl, she becomes a big girl.
Your housemate?
She blows up the lab, and then because she still has a child's mind, Dr. Stingray is able to be like, no, go back to sleep.
Yeah.
But while she was asleep, she could still see the children born from her gene seed. The Space Marines to her Primarch is my understanding.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Being abused by humanity and becoming a target for all their hatred.
Yep, she kind of, well, she's too young to, what was the word? Revolt against her creator.
Yeah.
So she's like, okay, I'm chill. But now.
Oh, and
now.
They also created Marky first and he was too human. So they just kept him around as kind of a guy.
I was going to ask, I was like, so how did Marky, like, fit into anything? And they're like, we made him, but he was too human. And the resolution of that is, take him away. And it's like, oh, so what do they do?
He's just
around.
Pretty human guy they have.
But, like, he just showed up at Celia's place later.
Yeah.
Where's he been all this time?
He was away. Maybe he was at Mama's house. We don't know.
But it's like, what? Like, he was just there, just...
I mean, where did Shinji come from in the first episode of Evangelion when he was on that bus?
Oh, I don't know. I haven't seen the show. I couldn't possibly comment. So, yeah, they just take him away, and then we get more of Galatea being like, well then.
Time to blow up the lab.
Time to get the fuck out of here.
She smashed humans and stuff through walls so much that they leave Wile E. Coyote style outlines.
Oh, I thought this was she absorbed them into the walls.
Oh, I guess it's open to interpretation.
Yeah. Because this one here looks too
precise.
There's
a grasping hand.
Yeah, but it's all grey and metallic. Artificial life. Dr. Stingray.
Good name.
Now, there was a line in her monologue that was like, humans, they reached the industrial age and we're now stuck in the Neotomy era or something?
Yeah, let me see if I can find that for you.
Yeah, because I got no idea what they mean by that.
I've been watching human beings. Humans named the copies which were born from me, boomers, which stands for voodoo organic.
Ugh. We get some...
Metal extension resource.
We get some shots of the cleaning boomer.
Yeah, the famous cleaning boomer that we all love.
He's having a great time until someone just throws a cigarette on the perfectly clean track he's been cleaning.
The word boomer holds the same meaning as the Hebrew golem.
Oh my god. Voomer. Have you ever heard...
The legend of...
I was going to say like a... What, like a priest? Just saying voomer?
What are you asking me?
Like... Priests speak Hebrew in the Jewish faith, right? Is that the thing?
I guess.
So, like,
are you asking me?
Have you ever heard a priest say the word boomer? And they're like, it means golem. I'm just, like, what if... What
I think
if
you're this, taking this too literally.
But what if it actually means something and isn't just ridiculous anime nonsense?
It still means something, even if it's not a one-to-one...
Nah, I refuse to believe that.
Everything means something, even if it doesn't mean much.
Nah, otherwise JoJo's...
Damning with faint praise.
Otherwise JoJo's would mean anything.
It does, that's what we've learned.
Nah, I refuse to... I think it's just a chaotic series. I think all media is a loose collection of unrelated shots and frames that we, the audience, accidentally give meaning, when really all it is, it's just images and words.
One of my pet peeves is when people, like... They look for a lore explanation for when something is clearly just doing like a thematic shot or something.
A lore? Like a... L-O-I. Oh, as an in-universe?
Yeah.
Like a diegetic reason.
Yeah, yeah. So like...
Oh, like a Thermian argument thing?
I don't know what that is.
It's like giving a diegetic reason as to why something heinous is being like, yes, this is good. And it's like, yeah, but it's not good.
Not what I'm driving at necessarily, but kind of related. The kind of thing I was thinking of was, do you remember Star Wars The Last Jedi?
Ooh, it's vaguely in my brain. Yes, go on.
I'll never forget how a friend of mine saw the end of that.
Mm.
And he was, and you know, it's got the kid with the broom and he holds it up and it's like a potent symbol of like
rebellion,
you know, hope and living on.
Yeah.
And he was like, do you think the next movie is going to be like after a time skip and that kid's going to be the protagonist and they were setting that up? I was like, what?
No.
What?
No, that's...
No, it's a thematic thing.
But what if, Liam? What if?
Oh, all this to say is I can't find that quote I've been looking for that you asked me to find.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got no idea what they meant by neotomy. So
you may not even be getting that word right.
Yeah.
Oh, here it is.
Oh.
Humans stopped evolving at the neoteny stage.
What does that fucking mean? Is it a word?
Neoteny. Noun. Zoology.
Ooh.
Also called juvenilization, is the delaying or slowing of the physiological or somatic development of an organism, typically an animal.
Huh.
What is neotenous in humans?
Hey, Liam, who has two thumbs and is neotenous? All of humanity.
Oh my god.
That's right.
Unless they've lost a thumb or were born without one.
Who has...
On average,
two... even then it would go down. Who has, on average, at least one thumb, on average, and is neotenous? That's right. Every human. Not dogs, but all humans. Is it just trying to be like... They are stunted in their evolution.
Neoteny in humans is the retention of juvenile traits well into adulthood. The trend is greatly amplified in humans, especially when compared to non-human primates.
Mm.
Neotenic features of the head include the globular skull, thinness of skull bones, the reduction of the brow ridge, the large brain, the flattened and broadened face, the hairless face.
Oh, so it's literally
hair
like...
on top of the head, larger eyes.
It's literally
like... ear shape, small nose, small teeth. Small maxilla, upper jaw, and mandible, lower jaw.
Oh. So it's just physiological stuff that we develop.
Yep.
Huh.
We could advance to the next phase of evolution and become robots.
Oh.
Robot aliens.
That is true. So you out here playing.
Galatea, yeah. She resolves that she needs to become God and...
And so she decides, you know what?
I'm going to go to space.
I'm going to become God. I'm going to do it.
Our protagonists have also gone to space, and the Skyhook has not slowed down correctly at the other end of its journey because it's gone crazy.
Yep.
And they're all launched into space. The helpful Boomer is never seen again.
Oh, yeah. No. He was the best of us. Mm-hmm.
Pris drifts
sort of
aimlessly for a little while. She does a lot of that in these two episodes, actually.
She at first is like, well, that's it. There's no hope. I'm going to die here. The Skyhook has killed me.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I die. And then her friends are like, Pris,
hey, Pris,
come on then. We're off to save the wizard.
Hooray.
The wonderful wizard of humanity.
So they immediately get to the space umbrella, the Shoham.
Mm-hmm. The Shoham project.
Yep.
Or the umbrella
they
project.
They've got 15 minutes to shut it down before the sun hits it and it fires a laser mm-hmm. directly at Genom Tower.
That's not a lot of time.
For no consequences.
So,
am I wrong?
I mean, there's some consequence. I guess the first one has no consequence, but every other one will have consequence. There's a lot of...
They managed to get there before Galatea, so they think they have a chance.
Yeah.
But even now, they feel her psychic pressure beaming at them.
Mm. So they split up, I think, at this point?
Nene goes to the computer room. Am I wrong?
The control computer or something?
To... Re-angle the space umbrella's receivers so they don't catch the sun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Smart.
I mean, it's wise. It's good stuff. Mm.
It doesn't work, but it's smart.
Yep.
She hacks in, but it won't accept her commands because, as we see, techno-organic tendrils have extended to all of the receivers and radicalized them.
It's basically like...
A web.
Yeah, a big organic web mm-hmm. of... Disgusting living yep. metal.
And the other two have found a psychically charged room where when they enter it, their hard suit arms start to ripple like they're going to go nuts. And they have to repress them through sheer force of will.
So they do.
They do.
That's that whole room.
Mm-hmm. Then they get into a further room, which Pris punches down the door with a big old explosion. And it's really cool. And the room is full of Boomer eggs.
Mm, with like weird...
Teeth
happy,
guys.
Yeah, weird happy teeth faces.
Who don't say or do anything.
Yeah, they're just big organic-y machines.
Yep, it's like got a like brain bioelectricity flowing between them all. They're all like one networked consciousness, we assume.
Yeah.
And it's all Galatea.
We love hive minds.
And she's like, all Boomers, all creatures which are not human are one with me. Ha, ha, ha.
One Boomer. Mm-hmm. Ha, ha, ha. All Boomer. I cannot count.
Lina starts to lose control briefly and Pris flashes to a big Victorian house with a little girl who's obviously Galatea.
Now this bit...
Yeah.
...is a bit odd.
The first of two of these sequences.
So Pris is in her hard suit.
Yep.
In a Victorian...
Ish.
In a Victorian-ish house with Celia.
Mm-hmm.
Or Galatea, as it were.
Well, she's got the evil eyes and he's holding the ball here.
Yeah.
So we know she's Galatea.
Yeah, she's got Liar's Game eyes.
I don't know what that means.
Liar's Game is like a manga where every time anyone's trying to be like smart, sneaky, or deceptive, their eyes go from like normal to this. Except
you need to use your words.
Like they lower their forehead down so they're just like looking
at
you. Oh,
I know those
you.
As Death yeah. Note eyes.
Yeah, Death Note. Except as the manga goes on and on, they do it further and further in. So they're like leaning further and they're like, oh, I'll get them. To the point where their eyes are like a pixel wide and you're like, are you looking up? Like, is this physically capable? And it's always like their head has to go out of proportion to make the Death Note look work. Because they're like, oh, I'll get you all right. And you're like, that's too far. This is what happens.
She's doing that. And yeah. she says, your clothes, young lady. I want them. And she's like, you know,
yeah.
I'm going to make your hard suits rock boomers.
Your clothes, your yep. boots, your motorcycle. I want them.
And then they're back in reality. And as we said, the mirror match starts. And I don't think we need to spend too much time on that.
The mirror match is literally pointless.
There's some good like exchanges of blows, but you know, it's not really dwelled on by the show to a great deal. So
I think this is one of the sequences where they tried to implant some kind of, oh, this is the resolution.
This is the climactic action sequence that we know you want.
Yeah, but really what it is them stalling for time and going, oh, they're in space now.
I mean, credit where it's due.
Mm-hmm.
The mirror match is the same thing as, but is much more visually interesting than the wall.
Yeah. Where they're just like, oh, how do we get past it? By being friends.
By being human.
Ah. And then they do.
Yeah, and she's like, by being a Night Saber, I am Lina. Hiya. And she karate chops a duplicate in half.
Feels like metal should be harder than that.
She's also metal.
And hard.
And force of will.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they're all psychically linked.
That's true.
Lina does have a series of flashbacks about her character development, which, as I said, is all from the first few episodes. It's like, what are we doing? What are you still doing here, Lina?
Yeah, literally one of them is with the man in the country estate, who was the nice businessman that she could have been with, that she was like, no, thank you, I like being in the Night Sabers.
Mm-hmm.
But we see him again, and it's very plainly obvious that they were like, we don't have time to animate his face, just give him like a neutral face.
Yeah.
So every shot of him is just like, hello, I have no emotion whatsoever. Maybe he was a boomer.
I doubt it. The Space Umbrella fires a big laser down to Tokyo, the Genom Tower. We never see what the consequences of this are, but they're like, we have to stop it before she recharges and fires again. And that second blast, for some reason, is treated as the big cataclysmic event.
Well, the first one was going to be Tokyo, which is
already boomerized.
And it's already, there's no people there. It's already been evacuated. So they're like, oh, well, no one's there. But now we know it can be done.
Yeah.
And this one is like, well, now it can't be stopped. She's already shot one, but we have to stop her.
Yeah, so they split up. Well, we think they're going to split up, and it's like that. It's like a girl power, team power moment where Pris is like, "I'll go. I'm the edgy leader loner, and I'll go and stop it. You two would just get in the way anyway."
And then Lina and Nene are just like,
"Ha! We're heroes of justice. I'm Lina, and I'm Nene. I'm the energetic one."
Is it weird that both of them have the same first name initials as us?
Shit! Fuck!
What's Lina's last name?
Yamazaki.
Lina Yamazaki, one of the co-hosts, and Nene Romanoska. Romanova?
Yeah.
Nene Romanova, the other one of the co-hosts.
Mm-hmm.
This is our...
And I'd say they have the same dynamic as well.
Shit.
Though I'm really more of a Pris.
Yeah, you are a big fan of the Moto Slave.
I love the Moto Slave. The Moto Slave is genuinely cool.
Well, we'll get to that soon.
They run back into the egg room and they're just fighting like big wet balls, really.
Yeah, but filled with heads that... You know what they remind me of? Coming back to Berserk again.
They remind me of Rover from The Prisoner.
They remind me of that one guy. In fact, they remind me of two things. You know that guy in Berserk
who has... I don't know Berserk.
Never mind. There's a guy in Hellraiser who's like got... He's got teeth, but it's like...
Oh yeah, I've seen this guy.
Yeah.
He's always
chittering.
His like lips have been pulled
back
away.
Yeah, his lips have been pulled back with like BDSM hooks. And he's always chittering away, and
he loves to chitter.
He's a fan favorite for good reason, because he's rad.
The little guys in the eggs are doing the same thing.
Exactly. They're all chittering away, being like, we love being boomers.
Nene plugs her USB cords into the space cannon and is like, help me counter-hack it. Lina, join your psychic energy with me so I can maintain my sense of personal identity.
Give me a hug.
Yep. Oh no, it didn't work. And they're launched into space.
Wait, what? It does work, doesn't it?
Nah.
Well, no, they set it up.
That's
and
right.
Just
you know, you're right. I misinterpreted how this went down because I was waiting for it to become a big woman. Because I knew that was coming.
Every part of this show devolves into, I'm waiting for whatever the fuck this is to become a big woman.
Well, I remembered that imagery from when she's powering up her final beam. So I thought that was the first step of that.
So
they use their mind, boomer mind link, to like make the increasingly fleshy exterior of the... solar cannon like
even fleshier
contort and like a growth comes over the end, thereby redirecting the beam
into
elsewhere
itself.
Into space.
It's basically like, oh no, I've grown a tumor, now it's blocking my rifle.
Yeah, but it also knocks them loose and now they're drifting through space. Oh no.
Yep.
And then the big old space station becomes a big old face.
Andross.
Yeah, she goes full Andross mode.
Literally Andross.
Galatea has entered her Andross era. She's Lilat maxing.
Fox McCloud, where the fuck are you? Andross, beautiful face, you know? I wish I could be so stretched
out. Hey, I'm on your side here, Pris. I guess Pris is the Falco of the Night Sabers. Nene, Slippy Toad, obviously. Cilia, Peppy Hare, which leaves Lina as Star Fox. Yeah, it all works out.
It all works out. But then who is Star Fox's...
Crystal. It's Marky, obviously.
No. Who's Star Fox's dad?
Oh, James McCloud.
Yeah. Who you only get by defeating Andros
Dr.
on the
hardest Stingray?
Difficulty. Ooh, that could make sense. Or Alan.
No.
No, because he comes back and he's like, you know, the boomers can be our friends. What do you mean? Just ask it for help.
I mean, Alan would obviously be Andros, but the metaphor kind of falls to down.
Yeah, because Galatea's Andros.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but no, but Alan would be like, he's just in his ship that just so happens to be one long fucking chair.
Yeah.
And he's just like, they're our friends! Because they resolve it by being like, they're our friends. Once.
Second episode.
So this is...
Still alive and well.
Still alive and well.
Let's just get the whole Lina and Nene thing out of the way.
Okay.
They are drifting in space, and Lina's like, do we have enough fuel to get back to the space station? And Nene says, no. Although we look like we're staying still, we're actually falling inexorably towards the Earth, and soon we'll be trapped in its gravity well, and probably burn up on re-entry.
And Lina obviously does not take it well.
Yep. Given some time and thought, they... achieved the synthesis ending of Mass Effect 3 and become one with their boomers emotionally and mentally.
Yep.
And allow their boomers to take their natural forms of space dolphins.
Yep. Yep.
Thereby allowing them to survive re-entry, though the hard suits do not survive, as we see later when they are crashed on a beach in a presumably Pacific island.
Yep.
And that's a wrap on Lina and Nene.
Yep, they're just naked on a Pacific island with no way
they
of
got
SOS-ing.
Better than Pris, TBH.
I guess, yeah.
Food, vegetation, shelter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. You could make a good
company.
Coconut party. Company. Yeah. That's all they got forever now.
Yeah, so then the rest of the episode, more or less, until the end of the climax, is in space. With Pris.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of, like, what's the best way to describe what the fuck goes down?
They kill a god.
I think that's a pretty good summation.
Yeah.
With a motorbike.
Yeah. A cool enough motorbike can kill... Is your motorbike cool enough to box with God?
You wouldn't kill God with a motorbike. Well, wouldn't I?
Pris is alone on the increasingly fleshy space station, and she looks over, and then, like, sorceress Jesus mode Galatea is there in a white robe.
Oh, I'd call it a toga for sure.
It's not a toga. It's not what they look like.
Actually, no, you're right. I thought it was a toga. It's actually... Yeah, it's more like,
A robe.
Yeah, like a jet... No,
or a muumuu.
What's the... You know the... Okay, the Star Wars question. What's the name of the big, long people that make the clones?
Kaminoan.
Yeah, they look like a Kaminoan robe.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, okay, never mind. Wait, then what kind of robe does it look like?
It just looks like a general robe.
No, there are all kinds of robes, Liam. You got to be specific with your robes.
It looks like a wizard robe.
Damn it, you got me there. It does look like a wizard robe. It's very long. Very, like, magical.
And this evil sorceress shows up and casts a spell on Pris that makes her hard suit go rogue. And it turns into the alien from Alien, but it doesn't do anything after that transformation.
Yep. It looks like Sonic from Sonic Unleashed.
It gets the like, long, shiny skull of the alien. We don't see it open its... It does open its mouth. We don't see if it has a second mouth in there.
I don't think it
does.
But
it does have Pris's mouth in there.
It has,
which,
like,
is a second mouth.
Ooh. It has, like, claws. It's got, like,
its
foot
claws.
Its feet
turn into, yeah, like, raptor feet claws.
And it's got, like, an arched back now.
But then it pretty much just starts fusing into the space station.
Yep.
And we spend most of our time in its existence focused on Pris's mental journey as she returns to the country estate of Celia's mama.
Hmm.
And she's talking to this little girl, which is like, hi, are you Celia? Yes, I'm Celia.
Well, hi, Celia.
Hi, I'm Pris.
Well, it wasn't Celia at all.
No, it's me, Galatea. And... You have become sort of the metaphorical equivalent of the anti-seed that created me, because now you are trapped inside the boomer that is your hard suit, and your life functions are giving it regularity.
Mm. So you, in a sense, are the anti-seed of
You have kind of achieved the synthesis ending of Mass Effect 3, but in a bad way.
So I think the idea here is... Oh, look at this lies
game.
Yeah,
she gets the evil
look.
Eyes. She goes red. The nearby tree becomes covered in, like, fleshy growths.
Yeah, so the tree is dead.
Your mind and body have become dedicated to boomers, Pris.
But the branches
well,
are just
I've been using Facebook too much.
So we then see, like...
Her I have no mouth and I must scream situation.
Yeah.
She's trapped in the body of her hard suit and just, like, has fleshy tendrils piercing her body all over.
Yep, and she's like, oh God, what can I do?
It's even got the same, like, fucking tail as the alien.
Yeah, it kind of does, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. So
meanwhile, Leon is looking at space.
Yeah.
He's like, I sure hope those girls are doing okay. And Nigel's like, yep. And that's the end of that.
Yep, that's kind of it. There's like a weird line about like, isn't it ironic that the world's
going to
be saved?
Three such annoying women.
Yeah, three annoying girls are going to save the world, not me.
Shut up, Leon. Shout out to Nene's machine empathy for allowing her hard suit to anamorph into a dolphin.
Mm. And just gently glide down into the Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah. Turns out re-entry sucks.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I recently watched a video about, like, why do things get hot when they come in on re-entry? And it was like, well, because it gets hot. And I was like, oh, yeah.
I was listening to the podcast Bunta Vista recently.
Mm.
And they were talking about the Columbia space shuttle disaster.
Yep.
And that devolved into a discussion on a video one of them watched about how you would best cook a turkey on atmospheric re-entry.
Okay. Actually, wasn't that a thing that someone sent, like, a chicken on a weather balloon and then cooked it on re-entry?
I don't know.
Or something? I can't remember. It might have been like a Tom Scott video where it was like,
chicken.
We're going to send this up on a weather balloon and then we're going to drop it and it'll cook.
Let him cook.
And then they did it and they were like, yeah, look, it's not the best chicken.
Who's
but
that
it's
guy? Right. Who had the apple fall on his head?
Apple fall on his head.
Eureka. I've discovered gravity.
Oh, was it Newton?
Let's say yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how he... Let him cook. Let him cook.
Yeah.
Via.
Where he's like, I've done it. He runs over and he's like, guys, throw this chicken into space.
Yeah.
And it'll prove gravity exists. And they're like, you're
and
crazy.
And we'll all have a delightful snack afterwards.
And then from that point on, space elevators were the best cooking device known to man.
Pris can see through Galatea's eyes because she's been subsumed into the Boomer Collective.
Mm-hmm.
And she can see that her friends are doing atmospheric re-entry. But she's too kind of catatonic to have to vocalize a reaction to that. But it does inspire her to keep fighting. She painfully rips free of all the tendrils in her skin. And her hard suit returns to being
a normal human
a
form.
A cool mech.
Mm.
I thought, you know, there's not a lot of action scenes remaining in this show.
Mm.
Would have been pretty cool if she went like beast mode on some...
Some tendrils?
Some boomers or whatever in her feral boomer form.
I mean, I do enjoy that this is very similar to like...
Because it just kind of hulks out and then doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I do enjoy that this is very like ideas-centric as opposed to here's an action sequence.
Yeah, you know, there's something to be said for that. But like,
yeah.
Just, I don't know, it's a cool design for a feral hard suit and it almost feels like a wasted opportunity that doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Then the big space umbrella tower turns into a...
A big Galatea.
Looney Tunes Tasmanian Devil tornado for a little while until it resolves itself into Galatea's upper body like when she was on the tower.
Mm-hmm. And then she just sort of starts yelling.
Foreign substance in the body, activating immune system. And then a bunch of white orbs and tendrils chase after Pris.
Yep.
She's dodging them and she's going to go get a big punch to destroy Galatea and her battery runs out. And she's like, well, I guess I'm just drifting in space forever now. But... She achieves the synthesis ending of Mass Effect 3.
Emotionally and mentally?
Yeah, by working together with a machine.
Okay.
The Moto Slave, which is like, hey Pris, I'm alive.
And she's like, who the fuck is this?
Pris, tell me to help you. Tell me to be free and help you.
Yeah, sure, I'll let you do that, but who is this?
I'm a motorcycle.
You son of a bitch.
Pris, have you ever seen Heat Vision and Jack, the show starring Jack Black, as the world's smartest man who has a supercomputer in his head that only activates when he's in direct sunlight, and also his talking motorcycle named Heat Vision, voiced by Owen Wilson. I'm kind of like the motorcycle from that, and you're on a solar-powered space station.
I have so many questions about how they prevent him from being in sunlight.
They only made a pilot, I'm pretty sure. Okay. So they put him in jail, and then as the sun started going down, the beams came through and gave him the smarts to escape.
Right, okay. Because I would assume that he'd be
smart
enough.
It wasn't a very serious show.
Yeah, I assume he would be smart enough to never leave the sunlight.
Well, the sun goes down.
Cancer. Mm.
Yeah, how ironic.
Yeah, he was the smartest man alive, and the thing that took him down was the same thing that made him who he was.
His horoscope. Cancer.
Oh, no.
So, which star sign are each of the Night Savers?
Anyway, so...
Pris is a Scorpio.
No, I refuse to go down this... So the Moto Slave shows up.
You're learning.
I know I'm learning, but at the same time...
No, you're learning to say no.
The Moto Slave is...
The Moto Slave flies through space with its motorcycle powers.
Yep. And it's all like, hey, wait, hang on a second.
It does.
I mean, it does, but also that all, I've just realized what that means. How is it flying through space? Anyway, it's got jet engines on it.
It also can turn into a mech, so it's fine.
Oh, yeah, true.
And it does do that when it arrives, and Pris is in, which she's, I believe, used once previously in the show.
Yep. She's all like, oh, now we are
in Gurren Lagann. Now I'm in a bigger mech. Now, yeah, we can Gurren Lagann. Yep. We can fight Galatea. We fight a heap of...
gender stereotypes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, we're really pushing feminism forward.
Yep. She's
killing this giant woman.
To be fair, this suit is packing heat. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah, it's got that grenade launcher thingy, blows up some
The legs.
Some metaphorical white blood cells. No, you're thinking of the next suit.
Am I?
Yeah.
At this point,
Galatea opens her mouth and like starts gathering spirit bomb energy and just going like, oh.
Like a big conclave of Buddhist monks being like, except it's just one of her and she's just awkwardly yelling, just going like, ah.
Pris is all, incredible, I can move so fast in space, but I'm gonna smash your god.
Is that okay? And then the moto slave is like, my real master is you. And she's like, shut up.
No, you need to achieve self-actualization, like I did.
Me, Pris.
Yeah.
The most self-actualized person in the show. Mm-hmm. I live in a bus that was abandoned many years ago.
But I choose to. And I kill clowns with a piece of rebar.
I'm the most self-actualized motherfucker.
She fires a heap of big gun rounds into Galatea, but it's largely ineffectual. And then cool shot of like the big face that's still there,
mm-hmm.
activating energy, and she mobilizes all of the eggs, but also all of the solar umbrellas, satellite catchment thingies, yeah. And just like smashes them all over Pris, entombing her in fleshy metal.
So she is now, for all intents and purposes,
once again just drifting aimlessly through space.
Yeah. So she becomes the anti-seed of her destiny.
It's true. But she uses her pure force of will. The spaceship, the space umbrella has become hella fleshy now. It's a real sort of near automata end boss stage situation. But she uses her pure force of will to form all of this metal around her into an even bigger mech suit, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So the mech suit is packing heat. Like, I have to make this as clear as possible.
It really just wants to draw attention to, like, the phallic growth at the base of the...
oh, yeah.
...of the robot.
See, the most appealing thing to me about this isn't the beautiful naked woman inside, but rather this weird appendage that the animators were like, this is the design we're going with.
Now, this is very sort of Gurren Lagann in that it's mechs in mechs in mechs.
Yes, yes. And this is our destiny being fought against God.
And so she's up above Galatea, and she forms all of this metal into a huge phallic sword or lance and plunges down, piercing the feminine immoral goddess, killing her instantly.
Well, not quite instantly.
And if I refer to my lit crit bullshit notes...
oh, Christ, here we go.
Obviously, that's a very phallic motion, the sword or the lance piercing the feminine target.
Okay.
Then I thought the subsequent energy reaction had a very sort of ovum and sperm iconography, in that there was this like central ball that all of these smaller motes of energy were flowing into creation of a new purpose.
Yeah, the big bang that occurs afterwards.
Yep.
A new stage of
dying Galatea is like, my purpose, not to die, but reproduction.
She was the egg. And the
revive
stick.
The evidence of being God.
Yeah. It's all about the rope and the stick.
I found the right path of evolution. And this comes back to how the sort of the central thesis of the lyrics of the OP, which once again, I've heard it many times. Seen it twice.
And I don't remember.
About how ultimately the lyrics of that song are about how it's better to fuck than make Frankenstein's monster.
Oh, as in have a good time. Don't.
No, like have kids the organic way. Love way.
I see. Don't IVF. Sex.
No, yeah, don't make Frankenstein's monster. Sex.
Oh, okay. Specifically, don't make things out of dead people?
Well, the boomer.
Yeah.
The boomer is Frankenstein's monster.
But the boomers are our friends.
So was the monster.
Oh, I see. The monster is children. But so are children. So make children.
That's the real assimilation. I will be in everything. That's the real form of God. And then she explodes into neutrinos that shower everything on Earth.
Now, this I take offense to because we are already showered in neutrinos.
These are her special neutrinos.
Ah, these are my neutrinos.
Rohan Kashibe, give me your neutrinos and I'll let you go.
Oh, man.
Let me get Josuke's neutrinos.
Yeah, Leon just sipping at his whiskey in a pub, being like...
Press on the moto sleigh, trying to outrun Highway Star.
Oh, yikes. I just wish for neutrinos.
And these beams of energy, they hit...
Everything
on Earth. We see them in the US.
The UK.
Presumably.
Austria.
The bar that Nigeria, Leon has gone to.
South Africa.
Daily not pictured. Chief Earth. Nigel Kirkland not pictured.
New Zealand.
Cilia and...
Brazil.
Maceo and Comatose Maki are... Not Comatose, Catatonic Maki, in the real version of that country house that we saw this episode.
Yep, and Maki's on a swing.
Yep, and Maki, yeah, classic catatonic child character.
Yep.
Being motionless on a swing.
Yep.
But then he stands up and they're like, oh my god, Maki. And he looks and he smiles and yay, right?
Well, we don't know if he's okay, but we assume
so. The last of her legacy, she gave him back.
My god. Or something.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
She will be in everyone because of radiation.
Yeah. Maybe, probably, mostly Maki. Maybe.
And Pris lands in the middle of the desert.
Landing with these angelic wings.
Yeah,
or
for
something.
Some reason, we see the shattered form of her heart suit and it's got these huge wing growths on it. Mm-hmm. She's like an angel returning from heaven. Maybe she's like Lucifer in that she killed God.
Do you understand the story of Lucifer at all? Is this...
Oh, we do have fun here.
So, Lucifer killed God, returns
to Earth.
And
then fell to hell.
Fell into the desert and is all like...
I'm
going to
sing a pop song now before I die of exposure.
Oh my god.
I was driving towards a semi-reasonable point there before I decided to derail it.
No, all good points are nonsensical because if you don't, like, be
stupid... You can't
stupid,
take this too seriously. It's anime.
Exactly. Well, you can. But then you become...
But we won't.
Yeah, we're not Discord admins. Fucking bam.
Oh, and the Statue of Liberty's torch is lit up by the neutrinos.
Oh, yeah.
It would have been good. It would have been good and, dare I say, better if the Statue of Liberty's face became a Galatea face.
Or just a beautiful smile.
It'd be like the Ghostbusters 2.
And then it just ends.
Yep.
It just that's the ending.
Final fate of characters count. Galatea, exploded in space, now one with everyone.
Yep. Well, sort of.
Mass Effect 3 synthesis.
Pris. Stranded in desert.
Probably going to die of exposure.
Probably going to die of exposure. Nene and Lina, trapped in
Pacific
the Pacific
Island,
Islands.
We assume.
Potentially
better survival chances than Pris.
Good coconuts.
Maybe Maki and Cilia will go looking for them.
I doubt it. They're probably just like, we're done. And they're going to stay in their home forever. Nigel is happy.
What the fuck happened to Nigel? Oh, he was with them,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah. So he's happy in his home.
Yeah, he's resolved to be in love with Cilia.
Yep.
Maceo, obviously living his best life.
Yep. Yep.
Butlerin.
Yeah, he hasn't changed at all.
Nope. No development, no characterization beyond being a butler.
Leon, still an alcoholic, living in New York now.
Unlucky in love in that his girlfriend exploded in space and then died of exposure in the desert. Man, we've all been there, right?
Daly, actually pretty well off.
Gone back to the farm.
Yeah. Yeah, with the family. And
Nigel
whatnot.
Kirkland. Was that his name? Or is that someone else?
I think that might have been his name. I don't know. I know his name's Nigel. He's... fucking someone who's like 20 years younger than him.
Wait, who are you talking? Oh, sorry, Nigel. Sorry, yeah, that was Nigel Kirkland. No, I'm thinking of Nick.
Oh, the police chief.
Yeah, Nick police chief. AD police chief.
Yeah, he has a beautiful daughter.
Yep, love and life. That George Costanza looking motherfucker, he's still alive.
Yep, who's the other guy?
The
Finn guy?
Yeah.
Did he die?
Nah, they all survived. Yeah. No casualties.
Good on.
And of course, Mason is still staring at the city.
Is he?
He's probably dead by now.
Yeah, he probably got exploded by the laser.
That was a rap on Mason, right?
Yeah, but he's hella dead.
I mean, he was barely alive when we saw him last.
Oh, he was very dehydrated.
Yeah. Turns out he wasn't such a boomer after all. And of course, Mason's robot secretary still...
Still fucked.
She puts on her motorcycle goggles and rides off into the sunset. She falls in love with the moto slave, and together they have four beautiful microwaves.
Four beautiful microwaves. Yeah. Oh dear. So, yeah.
Adventure Time taught me that microwaves are the kids of robots.
Wise. Very wise.
And that's what we call a bubblegum crisis.
Highlight?
Of these two episodes?
Yeah.
There was some cool stuff in these episodes.
You cannot explicitly name one, though.
Yeah, I can.
Okay, do it.
Full on, like, I'm gonna say the Moto Slave mech fusion pre the...
Enormous schlong?
Not what I was gonna say, but, pre the third stage fusion. She got to do, like, some cool flights, she fired some guns. Yeah. Briss. Nice.
Yeah.
She don't give a fuck. She'll kill your god, if she has to, maybe even if she doesn't.
I was gonna say, my highlight, of course, was the third stage. Again, because I'm fascinated by why
they just love phallic imagery.
It's just, I don't know why they put that there. Like, did they go, oh, it's missing
something?
That's
just what robots look like sometimes.
No. Literally no other robot has looked like that.
I could find one.
But this one decided to
have... You should watch Evangelion.
Maybe we should watch Evangelion.
I don't really want to.
Okay. All right. Too much trauma. Too much getting off in a hospital bed.
Too much just like, And I know this is, like, kind of the point where they're all really fucked up people, but there's still just a lot of, like, sexualized depictions of 14-year-olds.
Yeah. Lowlights!
Lowlights!
Dolphins!
No, the dolphins are fine.
I guess.
Atmospheric re-entry. It's
I guess.
Cool.
Actually, no. My lowlight is the neutrino radiation.
Okay.
Because I was like, I actually know what that is. That's not...
Well, I don't.
Well.
As far as I'm concerned, it's a sci-fi concept, like gamma rays.
Gamma rays are a thing. What
Please.
The fuck?
You think we've got Hulks running all around?
Yes! Except they're not...
My lowlight is the first of the two...
Oh, the flashbacks?
No. Drop into Galatea's psychic world sequences.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't even Pris who was having the psychic freakout at the time. It was Lina. But Pris appeared in the vision. While she was telling Lina to get a hold of herself.
Oh, okay.
She flashed sideways into...
Right, okay. Oh, yeah, because she was like, where are we?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is weird, now that you've pointed it out to me. Yeah, why would Pris be there if Lina was the...
Because Pris had too much main character energy and Lina had depleted all of her main character points by joining the Night Savers in episode 4.
Interesting. I hadn't even thought this through. Yeah, right.
I know, Nick.
I also know.
And to close us out, as always...
A quote?
An explanation of how the Skyhook works.
Oh, fuck! Okay, how the fuck does the Skyhook work? Because the Skyhook isn't the space elevator, it's just the thing
a
that...
A space elevator has to sit at the equator and go all the way up to geosynchronous orbit at 36,000 kilometres.
Yeah.
A Skyhook can be in low Earth orbit at a few hundred miles and can be in any orbit angle. You just have to make sure that the north-south extrema, where it is going due east, is at the low point in its orbit and over the transfer station. The Skyhook is rotating so that it is moving with the surface of the Earth when it reaches down. You can pick how high and how fast it is going. The Skyhook is usually thought of as being anchored to a good-sized chunk of asteroid that is spinning. The spin and orbit are boosted to make up for losses and the energy cost of bringing the payload to orbit. The Skyhook shown here almost reaches sea level, but never quite touches down and doesn't completely match the surface velocity. Should I just fade out the credits music over this? It speeds above a track with high-speed rail, presumably some sort of linear motor maglev. Cargo is quickly exchanged before the Skyhook pulls away from the surface. I really like the apparent lifting surfaces, as well as the sound effects that imply it might be jet-powered while in the atmosphere, which are far more efficient than rockets for countering drag.
This is all I wanted, but I regret everything.
Episode 1 implied the Skyhook descends every day at noon. Also must descend every 90 minutes or few hours, but it could be timed with some effort to have the same 24-hour schedule.
Go on!
The point opposite Tokyo is in the mid-Atlantic. So there could be another transfer station there. Tokyo is surprisingly far south, about equal to Los Angeles. I had never heard of the Skyhook concept before watching this show. It's so much more practical than space elevators in every way.
Is this
the show gets a +1 score just for this.
Is this the equivalent of a guy who's like...
This is just some Redditor.
Who like watches the show for the first time and everyone else is like 14-year-olds who are like, ooh, I feel something when I see the hot women. And he's like, ooh.
The Skyhook.
I feel something when I hear about the Skyhook. Amazing.
So, Nick.
Yeah.
What will happen next time on Bubblegum Crisis Tokyo 2040?
I want to say
don't answer that.
Nothing official.
Yeah, let's do another OVA or two next and figure out officially what we'll do after that. I think we will do a Delicious in Dungeon episode just to have a chat. But maybe by the time we get around to that, I won't want to anymore.
All right. You're a fickle man, Mr.
I am. And you can't stop me.
Sure I can.
Well, you'd have to fight me in space for that.
Well, I'll see you in space, mother... I'm going to go invent a whole new robot. I'm going to make the Skyhook a thing. And then you'll be all like, Nick,
I am impressed.
Yeah. And then I'll be like, well, wait till you see what I got in store for you. And then I give you a moto slave.
Hooray!
And you can be like, can I...
Do we have to call it that?
Yes. If you don't call it that, it's just a bike. And quite frankly, I won't stand for it. Yeah, we'll figure out something. Yeah. We always figure out
and
something.
And also, you also told me that we might need to take the next episode in our usual recording cycle off. Is that correct?
Yes, because I have to go to the dentist like an adult.
Okay, and we have busy schedules otherwise.
Yes.
So, we'll see you in like a month, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. All right.
Until then, don't trust boomers. Yeah.